You have questions about what's impacting the healthcare system, from pandemics to products, we have answers. Welcome to Banner Aetna, Workplace in Focus. And now, here's your host, Banner Aetna Market Head of Sales, John Dingeldine.
Welcome, everybody, to this edition of Banner Aetna Workplace in Focus. Today, we're really excited to have Dr. Bill Gillis on with us to discuss the impact COVID has had on mental health. Dr. Gillis, welcome. We're glad you're here.
Man, I thank you so much just for the opportunity to have this discussion. I know all of us are, you know, during this time, 2020 just seems to be a never-ending experience for all of us. But, you know, the topic of mental health for us is touching all of us during this period of this pandemic, which will be, you know, with us for a while.
Yes, exactly.
So it's a near and dear to my heart. Obviously, a psychologist by training. I work with Banner. So being able to continue to support you all in how we're helping all of us with our mental well-being needs is an important topic for us today.
Yeah, so thank you, Dr. Gillis. I think we can all agree there's been an increase in healthcare needs, especially during this pandemic. It takes a lot of different shapes and forms, I am sure. So is it an increase in previous conditions, or have we seen new challenges as a result of the pandemic?
I think the good part of this discussion is we're going to get into later things we can actually do to support ourselves and everybody else during this time. So prior to COVID, we were already dealing with some serious things as it relates to mental health. And we have been seeing in just trend increases in isolation and loneliness, unfortunately. And I don't want to throw a ton of data at everybody, but if you can imagine, one in five Americans prior to COVID were saying that they were feeling lonely and socially isolated. And then if you think about, well, what's COVID done to that? Then we've seen across the board for all mental health conditions, significant increases, you know, be it anxiety, depression, ADHD, autism. I mean, just, and unfortunately, for the serious conditions, especially around substance use, opiates, heroin, it's doubled, you know, among, you know, our population, especially with young adults. This is all pre-COVID and is getting worse. And suicide rates have also significantly increased. And then nationwide, you know, with all this pent-up need, only 51% of the folks that have a behavioral health condition are getting the care they need. And then we also have a provider gap. And this is all pre-COVID. So pre-COVID hits us. And it has accelerated all of that. And now we see, you know, folks that have, you know, behavioral health conditions, when you think about them, they're now getting worse, but we also see healthy people really struggling. Some other factors here, though, as we moved into this pandemic period, we are seeing that people are delaying and deferring treatment, especially with people with medical conditions. And a lot of these folks have also behavioral health conditions. So it's a double impact here for these folks. So the delay of getting care for your medical condition also means you're getting delays in care for your also mental well-being. And so those people are suffering as well. And then lastly for us, we all have suffered losses and we're continuing in that space. You know, losses just from, you know, the loss of normalcy. You know, the idea of maybe going to a restaurant and feeling comfortable, or the loss of control, loss of physical connection with, you know, loved ones and colleagues and friends. But then we start getting to more significant issues of loss of work impacting not only you financially, but our identity is part of what we do for work. Then loss of feeling safe. But then we get into loss of health. So we know for our loved ones and either maybe yourself, you've experienced COVID and you're dealing with the aftermaths of that or still in it. And then also the loss of loved ones due to deaths of COVID. So quite serious here for us. And all through this, we are seeing an emergence of what we're calling now a mental health pandemic. And we have to step into this and address it. We cannot ignore this at all. On top of all that, I live here in Southern California and the fires are still around us. We're dealing with the stress of other things, natural disasters, political and social unrest are just a few of the challenges that we're all having to deal with on top of this. So that is pretty bleak. So looking forward to the part of the discussion where we can talk about, okay, what can we do?
Yeah, absolutely. We will get there. One thing I want to ask another question about, you mentioned social isolation, social distancing. So what challenges specifically has the pandemic presented for people actually accessing proper medical care that they need or proper mental health care that they need?
Well, it's available. So that's the good news. Now people are figuring out how to make sure that where you're being treated, treatment facilities, and all that. We'll talk about access, you know, but it's available. It's now helping those people that really need it, you know, be informed that they can get access. They don't have to hide and try to avoid what they are perceiving as, risk. So I would recommend if you are at this place of thinking that you need to get help, call your doctor. They'll figure it out with you. They'll get you to that safe place to make sure you're being taken care of.
So as we think about the mental health provider community, what are the new updated resources and ways that the mental health provider community is meeting those challenges? What's new and available to people out there?
So let me start with primary care. Unfortunately, a majority of treatment for mental health happens in primary care. And, you know, if you think about those docs and they're so busy, and that's a lot of burden to put on them. But what we're seeing through this pandemic is that people have delayed going to primary care. And so that's, you know, that's definitely a concern for us. Because if they are on the front and they're treating majority of mental health issues, if people are delaying, then they're actually not being able to be identified and assessed and diagnosed. So there's delay in identification and getting people help. But also there's people that are in care with a primary care on medication for maybe depression, anxiety. They're not going or delaying care. And so we're seeing people that now they're not refilling their medications. And now they're falling out of treatment adherence there. And so the potential of their mental health condition is getting worse. But I think you asked, you know, what are we doing that's unique? So let me talk about that, because I want to make sure that, we're talking about how we are adapting to all this physical distancing and social isolation. One of the silver linings that have come out of this pandemic for mental health is that telemedicine has just exploded. So what we've had is we have our current outpatient providers, be it therapists or psychiatrists, with their current patient panel, have shifted all into a telemedicine approach. So that is great. So we didn't have people that were just, dropped because they couldn't do face-to-face sessions. So that right there is good. In addition, we have a very, very robust set of partners already in place for telemedicine that are ready to go. And so what we saw is, after March, between March and the middle of summer, we saw an 87 times increase in telemedicine use for mental health. It's amazing. So that's a great silver lining for us. Mental health telemedicine is here to stay. Now, I'm sure people will, want to go face to face at times. Personally, I'd rather do it in the comfort of my home. But what we've also seen in this is that this access is improved people actually taking that first initial step. So we're seeing a lot of new people go to therapy. But we're also seeing people that start therapy. We see lower no-show rates. So we see higher just engagement in treatment. And so those are the things we like to see, because telemedicine has made it so much easier. Some watchouts, though. We don't want providers that aren't, you know, their regular evidence-based care was maybe kind of questionable. Shift now from face-to-face into telemedicine is still do a practice that's not evidence-based. So that's our challenge for all of us to work together, is to make sure that, one, we provide good platforms for telemedicine, but also help drive, you know, quality. So that's one thing in, related to, you know, some changes that we're seeing. But with other things that we're seeing, in addition to the whole telemedicine, digital, you know, so online digital innovations that they've been coming at us for a long time. It's really the wild, wild west out there. There's thousands. If you search, you know, in the app stores, you will see thousands of mental well-being apps, you know, mindfulness, stress management apps, you know, what's good. And so we here at Aetna have been working very diligently to call out the herd per se and figure out which of these are actually evidence-based in approach, effective and based, you know, in, you have good research behind them. So what we're finding is that there are categories of digital tools out there that meet specific needs. That, you know, if you think about digital tools, it's one additional way to help people gain access to tools and supports in a much easier way. So that's overall, that's one of the big goals. But we have good tools out there for depression, anxiety, eating disorders, ADHD, recovery and addiction. So just tools specifically for, you know, mental health conditions. But there are a lot of folks that, you know, they don't have a behavioral health condition, but they're also just stressed out and having, you know, struggling with coping. So there's good digital tools out there about mindfulness and stress management, awareness, you know, just relaxation. Those are super, super important in our, you know, in what we're experiencing at this point. Two other areas that we are seeing that we want to get activated and in place, platforms that help connect people to others. So we're all disconnected. So there are good online platforms where you can connect and fight against social isolation and build those relationships up. Because, you know, as we say, you know, there are a lot of people out there that are just alone. And then ways to help people connect the dots on what do I need if I'm dealing with a behavioral health issue? Because a lot of times people just don't know. If you're depressed, what do I do? Do I see my PCP? Do I go to an online app? Do I go see a psychiatrist or a therapist? It's hard. It's not like if you break your arm, you know exactly what to do in the medical world. Not so with mental health issues. Couple more areas here that are emerging that are important that this whole virtual push is helping. We like certified peer support. So if someone is coming out of a hospital for alcohol or substance use, we want to do everything we can to get structure and stability in place. And peers have been great. They have a lived experience. They're trained as peers, but there are not enough of them. So we're partnering with the organization so that we can do this virtually across the United States to get that additional layer of support through peers. And last thing I want to say is I'm concerned about our, you know, primary care and our specialty care. They're on the front lines. They need help that when they do identify someone with a behavioral health need, they can have access to quick consultation from behavioral health experts, such as a psychiatrist. So then that through that consultation process, they could kind of figure out what needs to happen and then support whatever navigation process is needed to get that person the right care. So those are the things that are have been emerging right now during this period, this COVID period.
Yeah, it's really encouraging to see all the things that are taking shape to help make sure that we take care of this very important need. So let's make it just a little bit more personal as we wrap up here. So what advice do you have for everybody on how to make sure they're taking the best care of their mental health and well-being?
None of us at this point can be passive with paying attention to how we're taking care of ourselves. Every single one of us is dealing with stress, but that stress comes in the form of, you know, anxiety, depression, being angry, sad, confused. This is all normal. So first of all, saying, okay, this is normal. And from that point, then being active in terms of what I consider, and you find this in changedirection.org, they promote four healthy habits for emotional well-being. The first one is absolutely take care of yourself. We kind of forget about that. We're really busy taking care of others. Take care of yourself. Check in with others too, because there's a tendency to, when you start feeling stress and coping, to just kind of start pulling back. But also, when you connect with others, do so and connect and engage wisely. So stay away from things that you can see that might stress you out. Like Facebook right now is probably not a good place to go to if you want to be connected, because there's a lot of things going on there. But also with you and your family and friends, find time to relax and reduce stress, because you're going to need it. So that's for healthy people. People with existing mild mental health conditions, all those four things should be for all these people. But this is the point where you need to get more active in terms of, okay, what do I need to be doing with my mental well-being? So this is when you think about short-term therapy, or maybe your EAP, maybe looking at digital tools and those wellness tools, and also discussing your concerns with your PCP. That's really important, keeping your PCP, you know, looped in there. For people with more than moderate, so we're talking people that have moderate depression, anxiety, other disorders, the impact here and all the stress, their functioning is starting to decrease. And so they're not doing as well at work. They're seeing relationships kind of suffer. More isolation and connections are getting lost. And so these folks need more formal mental health care. So this is the time to start to get to see a therapist. You could, you know, do it through telemedicine, maybe be evaluated for medication management. These people, please consider getting into treatment. That's very important here. Also, consider getting connected to peer groups. Also, if you need virtual peer support, online support groups, you have to be careful with them, but those are important, because this is a place where this segment of the population can spiral and get into a worse place and potentially get into a place that is more harmful for themselves, maybe family. Also, suicide now becomes a risk. We need to be paying attention for this population. And so making sure that we have access for people and they know the suicide prevention hotlines, and that we're also considering caregivers. Caregivers are very important with this population. And the second to the last population are just those struggling with severe mental health conditions, and they have been just hammered on during this period. If you think about everything I've said, there's so much worse. And so we need to make sure we're identifying those folks, we're checking in with them, we're helping them navigate and access the care they need. And they can't do this alone. They need people with them, and we need to step in, help guide them, and make sure that we help resolve any barriers that are going to get away. And there's a lot of barriers at this point, especially around social determinants of health. And again, caregivers are super important. And then lastly, for those on the front lines, first responders, medical professionals, a lot of essential workers, you all are exposed to things that are super, super difficult. And so actively respecting and dealing with your stress, understanding the stress signals, so you learn how to recognize your stress, and then doing three things actively every single day. Take a break during the day. And a lot of people don't. You just wound up, take that break. It's not selfish. You have to do it. Take care of your own needs in terms of work-life balance, and then ask for help. So those are key.
Great advice, Dr. Gillis. Thank you very much for sharing your thoughts on the subject that really, especially during this time of crisis, is impacting everybody in some way, shape, or form. So we greatly appreciate you being on with us today, and thanks for sharing your thoughts.
Thank you for the opportunity, everybody, and I would just wish you well. Let's all hang together during this time.
Yep, exactly. And thank you to everybody for tuning in to this episode of Banner Aetna Workplace in Focus. Tune in again as we'll have another exciting guest on.
You've been listening to Banner Aetna Workplace in Focus. Learn more at banneraetna.com.